Hello, this is Brian Auten of Apologetics 315. Today's interview is with John Bloom, Professor of Physics at Biola University. He's also the Academic Director of the MA program in Science and Religion at Biola and the Chair of the Chemistry, Physics, and Engineering Department. The purpose of this interview is to explore his work in apologetics, the science and faith conflict, and his advice for Christian apologists. Well, thank you for speaking with me today, Professor Bloom.
Well, you're welcome.
Well, first off, would you mind telling our listeners just a bit more about yourself and the work that you're involved in?
Well, maybe I'll give you a brief life history here. I kind of went into college as a science geek and liked physics and chemistry, so I pursued a doctorate in physics, became a Christian along the way, and then got interested in how does Christianity and science relate to each other? So I went to seminary and then did further work in ancient Near Eastern studies. And then it's from those two perspectives then that I now do my work in science and religion. So during the day I teach physics, and then at night I'm involved with the science and religion program here.
Well, very good. I'm curious about your journey as a Christian. You mentioned that along the way you became a Christian. So how did you come to the faith, and how did science play a role maybe in that journey, if at all?
Well, I was raised in a, good, kind of tough to describe, but raised in, I guess, what one would call a nominal Christian home, and we went to church and things like that, and I did not have any axes to grind against God. But when I went off to college, I was kind of on my own, and those sort of religious things just kind of slipped aside, and I basically grabbed some of the promises of the world, and about my junior year I found out that those promises really were betraying me rather than helping me. So I was in biochemistry, actually, and had a lab partner who was a real Christian. I probably would have called myself one if somebody would have asked, culturally. But there was a difference in their life that really caught me up short. And I realized, that there's this relationship aspect to Christianity. It's not just sign on the dotted line, and if you believe this, this, and this, then you're a Christian. But there's a relationship with God and with Jesus that's critical. So kind of with that awakening, I would say I really became a Christian. And then I found it really interesting because I'd run into people and, I'd be telling them I was a Christian, and they'd kind of look at me and go, "Now, wait a second, Bloom, I thought you were smart. And you're in the sciences, right?" Yeah. But smart people don't believe in God. So what happened to you? And that's where the issues with science kind of started, because of this cultural sense that, science has ruled out God and smart people don't believe in God. So it's been interesting sort of after I really became a Christian that I saw the issues.
Now, as you were doing your work in science and your education, did you ever feel like there was a conflict between faith and science? And you mentioned sort of that typical assumption that, hey, faith and science don't mix. But what was your experience? Did you also assume that, or did you investigate it? And what were your conclusions at the time?
Well, at the time, my sense was, even before I became a Christian, I guess, was that, science does its thing and there's no major issues between the two, maybe other than miracles or something like that. But what I discovered is I guess more after I became a Christian, I was sensitive to it. There's kind of this myth out there that science seeks truth, and all that religion is just traditions and good feelings and things like that. So that I think is the issue I became aware of more, is that most people unfortunately seem to see it that way, that science seeks truth, and if religion has any value at all, it's just for an emotional crutch or something like that.
Well, from your experience, what do you think has been the best way that maybe you can counter that assumption or respond to someone who's just off the cuff saying, hey, Christianity, science, religion, they don't mix?
Yeah, what I found is, and to me what's still the most striking, I guess, is this myth that science seeks truth is actually the problem. Science today especially is focused on finding the best plausible naturalistic explanation for things. And if that's true, great. If that's not, well, our goal is to find the best naturalistic explanation for things. So I first saw that kind of clearly presented in a theology class, actually, where the professor was saying, well, in order to be scientific, we have to think in terms of these, you know, naturalistic explanations. And being trained as a scientist by that time, I was like, wait a second, I thought science went after truth. And as I investigated it, yeah, that is the issue. Science today focuses on naturalistic explanations, and if they're true, great. If they're not, well, it's still the best science can do. So when I point that out, that the conflict between science and faith is science's problem, because it's restricting itself to only naturalistic explanations. Science has become blinded by its assumptions, and it's done this before. People thought planets went around in circles rather than ellipses for thousands of years, because circles were the assumption, the geometrically perfect assumption. Or people thought that time and space and matter were eternal. Why? Well, because that's a reasonable assumption. So science can be blinded in looking at the world by assumptions like we must give everything a naturalistic explanation. And that's what gives rise, in my experience, to this tension that people see between science and religion, or Christianity more specifically, is it's a religious problem in the sense of the naturalism assumed by the sciences.
You talked there about naturalism and assuming it. Maybe some people who are listening have heard of naturalism. Maybe they've also heard of methodological naturalism. Could you describe what that is and its role in science?
Yeah. Methodological naturalism is the standard way you hear it presented, that when we're trying to figure out, you know, causes and effects, we can only appeal to physical, natural causes. We can't allow God to do anything, is basically the assumption there. And for most explanations, that's really not too bad, but to say that's our only tool that we will use to explain especially the big questions, like, you know, how did the universe get here, or you know, theological things like I mentioned earlier, or how did life get here, to say no, we must find, or we must only present these naturalistic explanations is the weakness. And you mentioned naturalism. That's seen as more a broader philosophy as opposed to the using that method when doing science. But to me, it's you really can't distinguish between those two. The philosophy is assumed when I'm in the lab or when I'm studying questions. I cannot assume that or that God has any influence in the world. That to me seems to be taking it too far. I prefer to be more open. What's the best explanation we can come up with, rather than what's the best naturalistic explanation we can come up with?
Well, in the discussion of the history of science, often people will talk about the role that Christianity has played in the field of scientific discovery. Would you mind just elaborating on a bit of history as far as the role Christianity's played?
Well, there's some people who've overplayed that, but in a general way, Christianity provided the right way to view the world for science to get started and to flourish. You see this with Newton and Kepler and Copernicus and Galileo and many, many others, where there's some views about the world that you get from the Bible that work. One of the big ones is that, you know, you can read the Bible and understand that God created the world, but that he created it to work in regular ways that were not going to change. So this expectation of regularity was one of the huge things. The universe is not chaotic and wild or ruled by a committee of gods that are mad at each other or something like that, but there's one God who set it up. It works in a regular manner, and just maybe we can figure out what some of those regularities are. So the expectation of regularity was something that was a view that Christianity brought to it. Another one is that the creation out there is good. It's been corrupted, but it's good and it's worthy of study. It's not evil and something that should be avoided, but it's we should see it as God's handiwork, and thus we can worship God in a sense by studying nature. And that's an argument that Newton and others you see giving. Kepler's famous for saying, we're thinking God's thoughts after him as we study nature. So viewing nature as working in a regular way, nature is good and something that we can study, and then that nature is not full of other gods and things like that. I phrase it as the Bible depersonifies nature. If you look at polytheism and pantheism, you know, there's gods everywhere. And from the biblical perspective, you know, there's the God who made it all. He rules it all, and there's nothing out there in nature that you need to be afraid of or fearful of, that it will come back and haunt you or something. So that perspective, that nature is worthy of study, that we should expect regularities, gave people the right mindset to start looking for what they could find out there. And that, of course, turned out to be quite successful.
Well, I think about this Christian or theistic framework that has played a role in creating the environment where science could develop in history. I wonder, at what point did things start to, if you will, get off the rails as far as this idea of a conflict or a divide between science and religion? Because sometimes I'm reminded of something like Paley's book Natural Theology and how widely that was read and accepted. And then at what point do you see this big idea of conflict coming in?
Yeah, I remember Darwin, you know, read Paley when he was in college and thought it was fantastic. So yeah, you're right on that. There's a long trend there that most historians of science, I think, go back to the Enlightenment philosophical movement in the 1700s or so in Europe, where as people were seeing the problems with Aristotle, they kind of rebelled against ancient authorities and said, look, we want to find truth through human reason and human experience and not trust these ancient authorities. And the Bible got lumped into that. So there's this movement to only base things on human reason and experience. And of course, Hume picked up on that and said, well, you know, we don't see miracles occurring, or I've never seen one, so by experience we can rule them out. So this focus too much on the human perspective, I think, is what sort of led that direction. It was very conducive to bringing in only materialistic explanations over time as well. So that transition is taking place, you know, in the 1700s, and with Darwin, it comes into biology in particular. Probably Huxley's the more famous one for being his, you know, publicist, if you will, but it has that kind of a long history of going back to only reason and experience, and then using too strict a criteria, I would say, by not allowing any input from the scriptures where warranted.
One thing that comes to mind is this view that was advocated by Stephen Jay Gould, basically saying that science and religion each have a sort of their own legitimate magisterium or domain of teaching authority, but these are like two domains that don't overlap, what he called non-overlapping magisteria, and people started calling that noma. Can you talk a bit about that and your thoughts on that?
Well, like a lot of things, there's some truth to that idea, because science, you know, like if I'm looking at the reaction of some molecules, it's not a lot of theology that comes into that. And if I'm marrying somebody, there's not a lot of science that comes into that either. So a lot of what is done in each discipline is done well by each discipline, and there's no direct overlap between the two, but where I generally pointed out the problems out are, and I think I mentioned this already, is in the questions of, okay, where do we come from? In origin sorts of questions, I think science and Christianity both have something to say about how the world came to be and so on. In historical questions as well, have certain events happened in the past or not? That's where both science and, or more historical studies of science and theology can have input. And of course, in theology itself, science can be helpful, but because a biochemist thinks that dead bodies do not come back to life, should not make me change my theology about the resurrection, for example. So there are areas where both speak to each other and both inform each other and can be helpful. Where I see the noma working out is where people will make a fact-value split, where they'll say, oh, science gives us facts, and religion gives us values and maybe some ethical input and that sort of a thing. And I see noma often used to basically dismiss religion as having anything significant to offer, because scientists have the facts and religion gives you some values and, you know, how you might feel about it overall. So in general, I don't think noma really works, is the problem. I've seen mostly scientists use it to defend themselves from theologians. scientist will feel free to make all the religious statements he wants to, as Gould was famous for doing. But if a theologian tends to respond back, I'm sorry, you can't, because you're a separate domain. And after all, we have the facts, you have the values. So yeah, NOMA makes some sense, but in certain areas it just doesn't work, and it's too often used as a shield to prevent theologians from having a voice on very important questions, really.
Mm. Well, that's good insight there, and it makes me think about the Christian point of view and maybe how science and faith can properly integrate. So what does that look like as a concept, and how might you play out this, maybe an integration model, in a practical way?
Wow. Do that in 5 minutes, yeah, or 2 minutes. A big chunk of it to me is the worldview in that biggest sense, is how do I see the world? Do I see the world as God's handiwork, or do I see it as a machine that runs and, oops, God did a miracle and, you know, did something? I think a lot of Christians have lost that sense of the world is God's handiwork, that he's active in it, maybe not always discernible in a, you know, obviously clear way in a test tube, but God's active in it. And how I sometimes describe that in a class is to say to think of the world as a musical instrument, and God's created the universe as an instrument to not just watch, which would be more the deistic clockwork mechanistic system, but he's made it as an instrument that he's playing for his glory. He's interacting with it. And to see the world, that's almost like fresh eyes for how to view the world. How do I do science then? Well, a musical instrument still has its physical parts that still obey regular laws. So there's aspects of the universe I study, but I realize that there's a hand playing it as well that I might not see, but is there, guiding and directing things. So that, I think, is the kind of the minimal approach I would take, is how do I view the world? Weicker and Witt have a book called Meaningful World that's been out a few years that tries to convey that sense, and I think does so quite well. The more specific integration to me comes in with the origins, history, and theology categories, where I think science needs to be open to having God really intervene to create things. And what would that look like? Well, I don't know from sitting in a chair, but can we go out and study nature and see what that might look like, what it does look like? Same thing in history as well. Are there events in history that have happened that are due to God's influence in human behavior, or, you know, miraculous intervention or something like that? So there's those areas. Then a third area of integration is, well, how can scientific insights help us understand the Bible better? And of course, not where we're using science to explain away things, but where science can provide us an insight into the nature of the world, or what's the best way to interpret a passage that might have escaped us before. So those, again, are kind of the overview, and then three specific areas where I think the two can integrate quite well.
Very good. Well, this brings us to the MA program in science and religion at Biola, and I'm sure that many of our listeners may be curious about that, and they've probably heard of Biola's Masters in Apologetics program one way or another, but they might want to know a little bit more about the science and religion program. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, the science and religion program is kind of a close cousin to the apologetics program. You would do mostly the same theology in both, but true to its name, the science and religion program focuses more really in four areas. One is the theology. The second one is in the sciences. What are the, sort of the current issues and the latest discoveries going on in the sciences today? And those are the two areas I kind of trained myself in. But as I got into this field, I recognized that in addition to science and theology, you need two more fields to get the right background. And one is history, the history of science and how it developed. And then a fourth area is philosophy. You know, how do we think about the world? What's knowledge? What is naturalism and methodological naturalism? That a lot of these issues center around philosophical issues. So that's sort of the four-pronged coverage in the science and religion program: science, theology, history, and philosophy. And you know, using those as the history and philosophy as tools to recognize where the problem spots have been and are, and how to think critically and Christianly to integrate those two well, the theology and the science well. So I think it's a good program. If mm-hmm. I probably, you know, I sometimes wonder, would I have pursued two PhDs and a seminary degree if something like this had been available? Because what I saw in seminary was I was spending most of my time on missions and weddings and burials and, you know, those sorts of practical theology issues, not on the science and theology aspects. So this program focuses sort of where it, at least where it itched for me, in those areas of overlap where the two have something important to say each other and where they can help each other.
Yeah. Well, a couple questions come to mind maybe prospective students might have, and the first would be maybe what sort of background should a potential student have, and then second, what would be the particular application for that sort of degree?
The background is fairly broad, because if you're a biochemist, we do some physics. If you're a physicist, we do some biochemistry. We look at a number of disciplines, and a person coming in with a science background will find they're an expert in one and not that, you know, sharp in the others. So we all sort of help each other to get even coverage there. But the breadth of what's going on across the disciplines is helpful, I think, because people tend to be so specialized that they don't see the whole array of evidence for God that's out there in these different disciplines. So we try to cover the science from an overview standpoint. And that means then that no particular specialty is required, if you will, to come into the program. So we prefer people who have, you know, a named degree in a science or science-related field, engineering or something like that, but that's not a requirement for it. It's mainly an interest in these sorts of issues. And I've had students with not a technical science background, but with quite a passion and interest in the area that have done quite well in it. The applications for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of two. Like the general apologetics program, just being a more informed Christian, a better ambassador, is one of the major goals, especially if you're in the sciences, to kind of work through the issues, particularly that Christianity and science have, is very helpful when you're relating to others, and they've probably gotten the question like I've had, duh. You know, if you're a scientist, how do you believe this stuff? So to have some good thinking in, on those kinds of questions to make you a better ambassador, specifically for science and religion, I one area I really like is the college ministry, because it's in the academic settings where you tend to see most this idea that, well, science has ruled the Bible out. So, and nobody who follows the sciences could really believe in God anymore, and so on. So Ratio Christi is a group here in the States that's establishing apologetic campus ministries, and my MSR students are really quite good in that position if they're looking for a ministry, specific ministry application of it.
Well, also, I wonder what advice you might have for people who, you know, have a heart for apologetics and they're considering educational opportunities in the area of science. What would be the different routes that you might advise people who just have a broad interest in the sciences and how they might be able to use it in a way that is maybe apologetic in nature?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of Christians get scared away by science. Well, for one thing, it's hard. That's certainly true. My students see that all the time. But we really do need more good Christians in the sciences. So I would encourage people to, if you like it and are good at math, and that kind of depends which area you go into, but if you're good at math and so on, and for the physics side of things, give it a shot and see if you cannot pursue a good degree in the physics or chemistry or engineering or the biology side. The closer you get to biology, the more it seems like you have to be a little bit more circumspect. That's one of the disciplines where if you show up at the door and are a creationist, people might be nervous about you. But people who are honest and do good work and study hard and are a bit circumspect generally can do quite well in the sciences, and we certainly need more Christians out there, again, as ambassadors in this very interesting people group of scientists and engineers.
Well, some Christian apologists, they are quite interested in, say, scientific arguments for God and things like that. And, you know, as you mentioned, science isn't the easiest thing, and these sorts of areas can be quite complex, and non-specialists, they can start to get out of their depth when they're discussing these sorts of things. So I wonder maybe what advice you could give to those who are interested in this area so that they can maybe perhaps avoid certain pitfalls that happen when, hey, you're talking about something that you don't have enough experience or knowledge about.
Yeah. Everyone has that dilemma. Probably, I guess, the standard advice would be to pick an area that's of most interest to you, and then focus on that so that you can say that you've studied that in reasonable depth. But then try to learn where good resources are for some of the things you just do not have the time to specialize in. Or look for groups and try to team up with others where you can each kind of pick a topic or a specialty and you know that one better than your friends, and but they know things better than you do. It does take a team, I think, to cover the breadth of issues that are there. Just an example, like, you know, William Lane Craig has sort of focused his career on the Kalam argument, and yet has picked up a couple of things along the side. So everybody does have, you know, one or maybe two areas where they have done some in-depth study, but then you look for colleagues and friends and so on to help you out with the other areas. And it really doesn't hurt to say, you know, I don't know as well. And, you know, give yourself some time to go off and research those issues. The best people should pause and say, I don't know, to some questions. So don't feel like you have to answer everything on the first shot. And a lot of times what's good to do, Greg Kokel with Stand to Reason here in the States is very good at this. Don't feel as a Christian that you've got to be the person with all the answers, with the impeccable worldview that can answer all challenges before, you know, you're good enough to go out there and talk to your friends or something. Greg Kokel is really good at asking others the right questions about their views, because other views are much shakier than Christianity is on its worst day. So to get a person to examine, well, why do I think that naturalism is the best view? Or why do I think atheism is true? To raise friendly, thoughtful questions of, you know, one's non-Christian friends or challengers, so that the burden is not only on you to defend your position, but to get others to examine just how weak their own views are. You can get a lot of, well, as an ambassador, you can go very far. Once a person recognizes how weak their own position is, they're much more likely to want to listen to you.
Well, that's good advice. And finally, as we begin to wrap up, Dr. Bloom, I wonder if you could maybe point our listeners online to where they might find out more information about the MA program and maybe some of your own resources.
I have my own website. It's not very sophisticated or anything. DrJBloom.com is one site. And Biola's Science and Religion program has a website as well. It's biola.edu/science-and-religion, all is one word, and that will bring up the page for the MASR. Apologetics has a similar web page. I don't know off the top of my head, but maybe you can list it on your website. One thing I should mention was this. Back in November, Craig Hazen and I spoke at the Saddleback Church here, and there's a series of lectures relating to Science and Christianity by me and Dr. Hazen and a number of other people that are all very good. And that website is saddleback.com/resources/apologetics. And they've done an apologetic conference there for a number of years, and we were the one speaking there this fall. And that's a nice kind of an overview, but a nice resource of accessible things.
Yeah, those are a great bunch of lectures that we've linked to at Apologetics 315, so I'll make sure to include that link on this interview post. But good. Professor Bloom, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today, and all the best in the program.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with John Bloom, Professor of Physics at Biola University and the Academic Director of the MA Program in Science and Religion at Biola. Find more of his resources linked from today's blog post at Apologetics 315. If you've enjoyed this interview, please share it with a friend on Facebook or Twitter. This helps get the word out about good apologetics resources. And if you're not yet a follower on Facebook or Twitter, please follow today for daily updates and perks. Do you have ideas or feedback for the interviews? Just send an email to interviews@apologetics315.com. Would you like to donate to help us grow as a ministry? Just hit the support button on the website to find out how. We're a recognized nonprofit, and donations are tax deductible. Our current project involves the transcription of all of these interviews. If you'd like to help out, just let me know. You can email me at interviews@apologetics315.com. Another project is the iPhone app. If you are a developer or would like to support such a project, please contact me at brian@apologetics315.com. Also, if you shop at Amazon using Apologetics315's affiliate link from our website allows a small portion of your purchase to support what we're doing. This is one way to support that only costs you a click, but it helps us immensely. There are links for Amazon.com, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada, all found on the right side column at Apologetics315.com. You can also bookmark those links for ease of use whenever you're shopping online. Thank you for your support. If you have a question that you'd like me to address in an upcoming podcast, you can let me know by emailing me at brian@apologetics315.com. Once again, this is Brian Auten, and thanks again for listening.